I am Plante on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jerry Nichols joins me again. He is a communications consultant, political strategist, and a trenchant observer of politics in this country and beyond. He is one of Canada's top five political minds, and the last time he was on, he said anyone could call themselves that, which Mr. Nichols might have done. I'm calling him that because he's pretty good. He is a former vice president of the National Citizens Coalition and appears on sundry programs across the country. He's an author, too, of Loyal to the Core. His website is at jerrynichols.com. Please welcome back to the Plante on the Line program, Jerry Nichols. Good morning, Mr. Nichols.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So the budget came out on Tuesday. The opposition, the Bloc, the NDP, and the Liberal Party have said they'll vote against it. Is there anything that could happen now between, I guess, now and tomorrow that could possibly save this government?
Well, I think the chances are slim and none, and Slim just left town.
Yeah.
For an election to be averted now would take somebody to do an awful massive climb down. The opposition would have to say, okay, you know, we're going to go along with it. We changed our minds. Or the government would have to say, okay, we'll compromise on one of these issues. And I don't see either of those things happening anytime soon. So I think you know, it's as safe as bet you're going to make that we're going to have an election this spring.
And is this a budget that the one that came out on Tuesday? Is this one that was created, contrived, so that the government could fall?
I absolutely believe that the Conservative Party wanted to have an election this spring. I think it really makes all the sense in the world for them to go now rather than wait. I think time is their enemy. I think now they have a good chance of winning a majority government. So I'm convinced that they crafted this budget with the idea that the opposition would vote against it and trigger an election. And, you know, as I wrote on my blog recently, I think the reason why the opposition voted against the budget was they were victims of their own rhetoric. For the last couple of years, they've been telling Canadians that this government is engaging in some kind of reckless right-wing agenda, that it's ethically challenged, that it's trampling on our democratic traditions, that it had to go, and they had really revved up their base. They really had people going, and Liberals and the NDP. So for them to have an opportunity to vote down this government and not take advantage of it, I think really what would have been a massive letdown for their own supporters. And for that reason, I think they had no choice but to vote against this, and I think the Tories sort of took advantage of that.
And so who looks bad at the moment, if we can look at the two opposition leaders, Leighton and Ignatieff? Who looks worst at the moment?
Well, I think particularly NDP leader Jack Layton was in a no-win situation. He was really in a bad spot. If he had voted for the government, if he had voted for the budget, as I said, it would have, I think, perhaps sparked an uprising among the NDP base. He would have been in trouble with the hardcore of his party. By voting against it now, of course, now he looks like he's, you know, triggering a quote-unquote unnecessary election. So he's going to get some heat for that. But I don't think once the election is underway, once we get going and once people get caught up in a bunch of other issues, people are going to forget about what happened this week. And it's just going to be focused on the campaign and what's happening on a day-to-day basis with the campaign. I think people are going to forget all about the little political games that took place this week.
So you're talking about people forgetting what happened this week. Do you think people will pay attention during the campaign? It just seems that over the last number of years, voter turnout has declined. I don't see it picking up at the moment. I mean, during this election campaign.
Well, it's been a sort of a trend, you're right, that people are not really, you know, engaged in what's going on politically in this country. I would suspect that the vast majority of Canadians don't have a clue as to, you know, what happened this week, why it's happening, what's happening with the budget. They're just not paying attention. And I expect that will take place as we go into the election. People will still not be engaged until we get into, say, the last 2 weeks. And I think once we get sort of that intense period, people will start paying attention. They will start getting engaged. They will get focused on what's happening in the vote. And it's at that point what I think, you know, elections are won or lost, when people are finally starting to pay attention. Certainly when I was involved in a campaign in the United States recently, we saved our best ammunition for the last 2 weeks of the campaign, because, you know, that's when people start really sort of following what the politicians are saying.
I was going to ask about that later, but you brought it up. You were involved in an American campaign. Was it for Congress?
I was working for a businessman. His name was Bill Binney, and he was running for the United States Senate in New Hampshire. And I was involved in his primary race as a communications director, helping him out with his communications.
Did he win?
Alas, no. We lost. It was a tough campaign. It was an open seat in New Hampshire, which is kind of a rare thing in that state. You know, once you get elected to the Senate, you're often there for a long, long time. So it was a rare open seat, and it was really heavily contested. There were four very good candidates in the race. We were up against the former Attorney General. Her name was Kelly Ayotte. She was the ultimate winner, and she had, you know, massive name recognition. She was well-known, well-respected in the state. She had establishment support. So she was a tough candidate, and did we run the best campaign in the world? No, we didn't. And she ran an okay campaign, so when you add those things up together, you come up short. But it was a really good experience for me. I learned a lot, and I worked with a lot of really good people, and it was fun. A lot of hard work, a lot of stress, but it was a good experience.
Were you affected at all by the sort of Tea Party element?
Tea Party is not that strong in New Hampshire where I was working. They were there. They were a force, but they were not as strong a force as in some other states. New Hampshire is more of an establishment state, but they did have a presence, and certainly Sarah Palin became a factor in our campaign. She, unfortunately for our side, endorsed Kelly Ayotte for the Senate, so that kind of set the cat among the pigeons in the campaign for a while. There was a Tea Party candidate who, surprisingly, Sarah Palin did not endorse. She endorsed the establishment candidate. But, you know, politics there is very intense, and the people of New Hampshire really pride themselves on retail politics. It's the kind of state where you can't run an election just by running TV ads. You have to get out and meet people, and there are town hall meetings all across the state. People there are really well informed. They know the issues, and they care about politics, and it was kind of interesting to see that kind of passion and intensity up close.
Now, we have seen some TV ads in this country. The Liberals, I guess, released some last week. The Conservatives had some a couple weeks ago. Have those been effective at all, do you think?
Well, you know, I can't really say without, you know, looking at polling data, but I suspect they have had some kind of impact. Certainly the Tories bombarded the Liberals for weeks before the election with some negative ads. Some I thought were okay. Some others I thought would be ineffective in terms of driving down Liberal numbers. But I think overall they must have had some kind of impact. And I think that, you know, that played into the Conservative Party strategy to have an election this spring. I think they figured they softened up the Liberals enough that they were ready to go.
So the Ignatieff and the Liberals, they want to fight this election on ethics. The government, Mr. Harper, would like to fight this on the economy. Are those the two real sort of issues that are emerging as we go into an election campaign?
Well, I think from what we've seen in the last month or so, that's definitely going to be the narrative from each side. The conservative argument is going to be, look, we've taken the country out of the recession. We have an economic recovery on the go. We've provided you with steady, competent leadership. Now is not the time to change horses. Now is not the time to hand the keys over to somebody who might form an alliance with the socialists and the separatists. That's scary. We don't want to do that. I think that's a very effective argument, and I think that's something we're going to hear repeated over and over again, and I think that will resonate with Canadians. The Liberals, on the other hand, are as you said, they're going to be going, I think, playing the ethics card and talking about the scandals and that sort of plagued the Conservative government over the last couple of weeks, Bev Oda and the Elections Canada scandal, perhaps the Jason Kenney fiasco. But I don't think that'll work very well. It's been my experience that calling a politician a crook or calling a politician corrupt doesn't really resonate very well with voters. I think most voters, their default position is that politicians are crooks, all crooks. So, you know, basically calling a politician a crook won't really be all that effective in changing their minds. And people tend to care more about the issues that affect them directly. They care about their mortgage. They care about the price of gasoline. They care about their job. And all the stuff which the Liberals are talking about, which the media is talking about, all these little scandals are more procedural things. You know, it might be of interest to people who are political junkies or wonks and to the media, but for the average casual voter, I don't think people really care about that stuff too much. So for the Liberals to sort of be playing that tune over and over again for the next 5 or 6 weeks, I don't think it'll get them very far. I think that's a losing strategy. But on the other hand, it's hard for me to come up with a winning strategy for the Liberals. No matter what scenario you look at, I can't see them winning this election. I can see the Tories losing the election, through some kind of unforced error, which they're prone to do. But it's hard for me to see what theory the Liberals have to win this election.
And who do you blame for that? Is that Ignatieff? He's the leader. I mean, do we blame him for that?
Well, I think a large part, you have to blame on Ignatieff, and I think this is really the difference between the two parties are the leaders. On the one hand, you have Stephen Harper, who, even though he may not be well liked by Canadians in general, I think most people see him as a competent, decisive leader. He's also experienced. He's battle hardened. He's been through three elections now, plus a couple leadership campaigns. So he's been around the block. I think he's sort of at the peak of his political powers right now. He's really settled into the job, and I think he's much better communicator than he used to be. And he comes across as calm and confident. Contrast that with Michael Ignatieff, who's basically an intellectual, and has at least not shown me any indication that he is a good campaigner or that he can come across with a message that will resonate with the Canadian voters. And he he's a rookie. And I always tell people that one of the things about Michael Ignatieff is, you have to remember, is that he lost to Stefan Dion. I mean, that's a pretty good accomplishment. I mean, losing to Stefan Dion, who was probably the worst Liberal leader in history. So that doesn't give me a lot of confidence that he can go out there in a national election campaign and sustain the really intense pressure that comes with that. Will he be able to go through that without making some kind of big mistake or some kind of communication error? I think that's a real problem for the Liberals. And the other thing that I would worry about if I was a Liberal is that what is their issue? As I said, I don't think the ethics issue is really going to hit the nail on the head. What else do they have? Stephen Harper, to a large degree, has stolen a lot of their fiscal policies. So it's hard for them to attack the Conservatives for doing what they probably would have done anyway. So if the race becomes, who can do a better job of what we're already doing, the Conservatives win that. So no matter how you slice it, I think the Liberals are going to be in real trouble.
Now, you mentioned the sort of ethics stuff that's happening that people probably aren't interested in, other than political junkies. This Bruce Carson thing, is that something that falls in that category?
Well, the only thing interesting about that is that there's an escort in it. That might catch people's attention.
Yeah.
But, these kind of scandals may have an impact, a cumulative impact. One after the other, they keep coming. Then people might say, something's going on. But I don't think we've reached that stage yet. It still might come back to haunt the Tories one day when people are tired of them and they're ready for a change. They might remember, hey, remember all those scandals? I'm kind of tired of these guys. But we're not at that stage right now. So, is it a black eye for the Tories? Is it embarrassing for the Tories? Is it something they'd like to avoid? Absolutely. No one likes to have scandals on their record or these kinds of little problems. But is it a deal changer, a game changer? Will it affect the election to any great degree? I don't think so. I think the best you can hope for if you're a Liberal is that it'll help mobilize your base and maybe get your base out to vote on Election Day. As, in terms of sort of winning over large scales of undecided voters, I don't think it'll really have an impact.
Will you have a role in this campaign?
Right now I don't have a role. I'd like to hook on with somebody if they're looking for some kind of communications guy. I'd like to help somebody out. I think I have the experience and talent to do that. Certainly what I did in the States, I learned a lot that can be applied here. So we'll see. I'm going to be getting my resume out there in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Tonight, a new episode of The Office comes out.
Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about the important stuff.
The important stuff, yeah, absolutely, yeah. My understanding is that Michael proposes to Holly. And I guess, does he leave tonight or does he leave next week? I can't remember.
I don't know. It's going to be kind of a heart-wrenching moment to think that Michael will be leaving The Office. And I'm not sure how the series is going to survive without his presence. I guess they're going to keep it going next year. But yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that tonight. I think the quality of the series has gone down in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But it still has its moments, and so I'm going to be looking forward to that tonight.
Do you think the show ceases to be good after Michael Scott leaves?
I think, you know, like I said, it's hard for me to imagine, you know, it going without Michael Scott. It's like imagining the Conservative Party without Stephen Harper.
Yeah.
You know, he's such a dominating, you know, sort of his the character Michael Scott is such a dominating character in that series. Everyone seems to bounce off what he does, and so if he's out of the equation, it's going to be hard to see how they can keep it going. But you know, who knows? We'll see.
A couple of seasons ago, I was thinking to myself that because the rest of the cast, they're very good,
mm-hmm.
And they started having stories about the other characters, you know, them being the focus of some of the episodes. And then in the last year or so, the focus has been on Michael,
mm-hmm.
which I found very odd if you're transitioning a star out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. They seem to be putting all their eggs in the Michael Scott basket, and certainly some have been, well, I suppose their strategy is to sort of have the Michael Scott storyline arc,
yeah,
and then end. So I guess it's all been building up to this grand finale, and I guess it'll probably be a ratings payoff. I know probably a lot of Office fans will be tuning in tonight to watch it, and I know I will be. But yes, it'll be sort of a bittersweet moment. It'll be kind of fun to watch Michael finally find his true love, or at least I hope he does,
mm-hmm.
with Holly. But whether or not the series will survive after him, I don't know.
Do you watch Modern Family?
I watch very little television.
Yeah.
Office is one of the few shows I actually watch on a regular basis, one of the few shows I actually bought the DVD for. That's how much I like it. But other than that, I don't really watch much television.
Yeah, I started watching Modern Family because a friend of mine really liked it, and so I got the DVD. There's a character on there who seems like he's Michael Scott with a family.
Oh, is that right? I'll
yeah.
have to check it out. Sounds good.
Yeah. Jerry, I appreciate your time. It's always fun to hear or see you on various programs, and I enjoy talking to you here. Thanks again.
Well, my pleasure, Joseph. Let me know anytime. I'll be happy to come back.
The website for more, jerrynichols.com. Jerry Nichols on the line from Oakville, Ontario, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.